Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, writing most recently over a change of direction for the Ukrainian military. Directed by the president of the country, Mr. Zelensky, there is a new general-in-chief, Oleksandr Syrsky, replacing a man, Zaluzhny, who is said to be extremely popular politically. This has to do, we're told, with decisions made in the spring offensive of 23 that led not to success, but now understood frustration, large casualties, and no promise of better ahead. However, this change of command does introduce the politics of Ukraine, because this year was nominally scheduled for an election, which I understand is now not going to be held. But Mr. Zaluzhny, when he left office, was even more popular than President Zelensky. Anatole, a very good evening to you. Your essay introduces politics into the general-in-chief. In this replacement by Syrsky, has Mr. Zelensky solved the challenge of a political rival? Or is Mr. Zaluzhny now, as an independent, capable of campaigning against the president, undermining him? Those are questions you raise in your essay. A very good evening to you.
Hello, John. Well, when I was in Ukraine last year, I have to say that every analyst said that they expected Zaluzhny to run for president in future, whether in succession to Zelensky or against him. So that was sooner or later going to happen anyway. Of course, as you say, the elections have been postponed. We don't know when they will be. But, of course, Zaluzhny is, since he's no longer the military chief, he is now free to attack Zelensky, and I would expect him to do that because you know, it's not as if this change of command is actually going to improve Ukraine's chances. There isn't going to be a successful Ukrainian offensive this year, and of course, the longer the war drags on, and especially if Russia you know, wins victories on the battlefield, the stronger the pressure will become for a compromised peace. And that, of course, will open a colossal political battle in Kiev, as, you know, all the different factions try to blame each other for something that I think they will all know actually is necessary.
The battlefield, just for a moment, there was talk during the spring offensive, if only talk, if only we had F-16s, if only we had weapons that could reach farther into Russia, if only we had more recruiting for the ground forces. All that if only was associated with Zaluzhny. Is that talk still back with Syrsky, waiting for the F-16s, waiting for long-range missiles? Just give us the weapons and we'll do the job. Is that still part of the conversation?
Oh, very much so. But the question is whether, you know, how far the West can or will provide the weapons. And remember, it's not just a question of the weapons. It's even more importantly a question of the munitions, the shells. Our industries are just not producing enough shells to allow the Ukrainians to match the Russians. And also, you know, there's this idea that you hand over the weapons and then they go immediately into action. They don't. I mean, in the first place, the Ukrainians have to be trained to use them and to coordinate them with other weapons. Because one of the problems that the NATO has, in a way, exported to Ukraine is one of its deep internal problems, which is that every NATO country has a tendency to produce different weapon systems which don't work well together. But then, of course, these weapons also have to be repaired and maintained. And the Ukrainians are not equipped to do that, which means either we would have to get them into action quickly, either we would have to deploy our maintenance crews to Ukraine, at which point many of them would be killed, of course, or the weapons have to be taken out of Ukraine back to Britain or Germany or America, maintained, repaired, brought back to Ukraine, and then the whole thing will have to be repeated, you know, maybe after a few weeks. I gather that all of the British tanks given to Ukraine early in the war are now inoperable, not because they were destroyed in action, but because the Ukrainians can't repair or maintain them.
We come to the story that you make very clear in your essay. The average age of Ukrainian soldiers is 43. I felt good at 43, but it wasn't 23.
Yeah.
This underlines manpower. What is the fact that we understand? I know that this can be regarded as propaganda. We have this, you have that. But is Ukraine not only running out of men, is it already out of men?
Well, that's what all the reporting suggests, you know, in the New York Times and the BBC and Politico and elsewhere. I mean, in the end, you know, Russia just has by now almost five times the population of Ukraine, given, you know, how much of Ukraine has been lost to Russia and how many people have fled abroad. It can just recruit far more men. And as the war goes badly, so the flow of volunteers and resistance to conscription is growing. I mean, one of the things that precipitated Zaluzhny's dismissal was a public clash over conscription, because he was telling Zelensky publicly, we've just got to have much, much tougher and wider conscription. And Zelensky, under huge pressure from the Ukrainian parliament and much of the population, was pushing back against this. But I mean, that is the other thing. You know, the West can give Ukraine weapons, but we can't give them, unless we send our own armies in, we can't give them the troops to use those weapons. And the failure of the offensive last year is now being blamed on Zaluzhny, and, you know, blame game is going in all directions. But the truth of the matter is, standard, military analysis suggests that to break through defended positions, you need at least a 3-2 advantage in manpower, and a much bigger advantage than that in firepower. And the Ukrainians just did not have it. It would have been very surprising in those terms if the Ukrainian offensive had succeeded, unless they had some, you know, wonderful new weapon like the tank in the First World War, or brilliant tactics. But those, well, you know, that doesn't happen very often.
And now Washington. The news is muddled, so I can only try for clarity. The Senate has approved a package of money, arms, for Ukraine. The Senate vote included 20 Republicans for, 25 against. I don't know the rough numbers here. In any event, there's a faction in the Senate that would reject more negotiation. In the House, I read headlines. I'm not convinced, but this looked like a passing story, that the White House is not talking to the Speaker of the House, Mr. Johnson. And the House contains a close enough vote so that there's reason to believe it will not approve this package. In other words, there's no cavalry coming to the rescue. I line up now. Zaluzhny, a popular figure outside the presidential administration. Sirski, an unknown. Inadequate armament, inadequate weaponry, and 43 years old is the average age. We have different numbers of the casualties each week, and the cavalry's not coming to the rescue. All this points to negotiate. Negotiate now, because it's not going to get better in the future. Is that being talked about in Kyiv, to your understanding?
Well, it's being talked about, but not in public. And with the one exception of former advisor to Zelensky, Alexei Aristovich, but who has fled abroad, none of the would-be presidential candidates or political leaders is talking about it because, of course, well, I mean, it would be horribly painful for Ukraine, naturally, because it would certainly involve not de jure recognizing Russian annexation, but leaving these territories in Russian hands. And it would almost certainly involve accepting a treaty of neutrality. So nobody wants to be the first person to propose that. I mean, so that is why it would have to be America that took the lead on negotiations. But the Biden administration is obviously hoping that with American help, Ukraine can hold its defensive positions at least this year until after the US elections. And then basically it will think again, or of course Trump will have won and then it won't be their problem. But of course the question is whether in fact the Ukrainians can hold out that long. And also the problem is that with every statement from Washington about restoration of full Ukrainian territorial integrity and so forth, the administration paints itself more into a corner and makes it more difficult, therefore, to offer a compromise in future.
You mentioned the Washington forces. There was a recent visit by the Chancellor of Germany, Olaf Scholz, and I believe during the visit, Mr. Scholz and Mr. Biden both made statements of support of Ukraine. We continue to support. However, there's reason to believe the EU is trembling because of the lengthy cutoff of energy sources. Germany is either in recession or near to great dissatisfaction with Mr. Scholz as a leader. Britain has just dipped into recession. It's part of the largest story of the economy of all of Europe in this winter, this third winter of the war. Is that a factor for Kyiv, that its partners in Europe are doubting the future?
Well, it certainly should be a problem. I mean, the European Union finally managed to overcome Hungary's opposition and pass this, very large economic aid package, $65 billion, if I remember rightly. But the European Union, as European officials candidly admit, cannot replace American military aid. European military industry is just not capable of doing that. And it will take a long, long time, many years, a decade is being bandied about now to build up European industries. So that Europe alone will not be able to sustain Ukraine. The other thing is that, of course, the growing economic crisis in so many countries and the decline of social welfare and health services is producing a tremendous boost for the extreme right. And we have to see what will happen in the European Union elections for the European Parliament in June. But all the polls at the moment suggest that the extreme rightist parties will do very well indeed. And that will certainly be, a strong message to European governments that they had better, try to get out of the war in Ukraine and restore cheap Russian energy as a way of trying to boost their economies.
NATO is part of the story when we come back. Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. I'm John Batten.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.